Welcome to episode 140 of the Force Geeks, a Star Wars podcast, where X-Wing marks the spot. This is our 14th show of our fourth season. Four seems to be the theme here. We'll still, there's a lot to unpack with this. We're still digesting the penultimate chapter of season three of The Mandalorian, and we're also still thinking about all that Star Wars celebration revealed from London. We're going to focus mostly on this episode, though. We're going to, in later weeks, we'll go more into what happened with Star Wars celebration. As we recorded last week's episode, there was still more happening. We'll go into more of that as well, but this is focused on chapter 23. All about that for The Mando today. And here's a quick rundown of everything we're talking about in relation to that in this show. It's a spoiler special. You know the drill. And this is for The Mandalorian, so be warned, we're going to ruin some stuff. The Mandalorian cements its place as a bridge for the events of the sequel trilogy with this episode. Yes, people have thoughts about it, and we're still reeling from that epic sacrifice from Paz Vizsla. The Shadow Council, by the way, of the Empire, that's in action. More retconning with Project Necromancer, and just how badass the Praetorian Guard really are. We're discussing all of that. And what's the deal with the Armorer? Is she one of the spies the chapter title is referring to? We'll get into that. Also, we're just days away from the season three finale episode, and it feels like we're getting some preemptive warnings from Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, and others from the show. Is this one gonna hurt? As one of the show's actors has said it will. And back to celebration, we'll be getting to a lot of that in the coming weeks. Again, I want to make sure you know that we're not forgetting that. I'm Nate Custer, coming to you from Northwest Arkansas. My fellow Force Geek from Seattle, Jake Scott, is back. And so is our good friend and fellow Force Geek, Chris Ridlon, back once again. And again, you guys were not able to hook up this week because obviously opposite sides of the country. It only happens every once in a while, right?
Yeah.
All right, Jake, after watching this episode, Is anxiety building as we head into the final episode of this? Yeah, I would say it's pretty safe to say that way.
For sure.
What are you most worried about after this episode of what will happen next? Are you worried? The anxiety is building for me for what's going to happen. So I'm just curious if you have that worry going on, or are you just ready to see what happens?
Curious to see who else they're going to kill off.
So you think someone's getting killed off too?
Well, I mean, somebody's always getting killed off, right?
It just depends
how important
enough.
They are.
Queel, IG-11, although we have IG-12 now, you know, all that funness. Chris, what about you?
I don't know, man. I mean, I think someone's not going to make it besides Paz Vizsla, obviously, but it'll be interesting to see how they play it. I don't know. I mean, I think they're, you know, there's probably something big's going to happen, obviously. And it seems improbable that they all survive, but we'll see.
I think the Armorer is going to get it. I think that character is going out in this next episode.
That's really the only safe person they can kill off. That's a main title character kind of thing.
Yeah.
They could go bigger. You never know.
They could. Yeah.
They could go
bigger. I don't
see
him killing Katie or Din Djarin, though. I just
know. I don't think Katie's the one either.
You're good. So you think Din?
You do? We there's a lot of thoughts on that. There's a lot of thoughts and theories on that. I'm not sure how strongly I feel that Din's up for that, but I'm not ruling him out.
Yeah.
With how much he's been sidelined this season and how Katie is coming up and some of the things have been said that, you know, the Mandalorian doesn't necessarily just mean Din Djarin.
Yeah.
So the show, I mean, they've talked about that. So, I mean, I could see that he was like the force that brought it together. I didn't mean to say like the force is in the force, but I mean, like, he could be the story thread that brought Katie in. And this is really her story. This is really Bo-Katan's story.
But I mean, if you want the death to be impactful, you don't sideline him beforehand.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. True.
As impactful. Obviously,
I don't see how they do that. Like that would be
like killing Grogu.
Extremely risky move. Yeah. Extremely risky move. So we'll see.
It would be risky. But everyone keeps saying like, why doesn't Star Wars take more risks? Yeah. I'm playing devil's advocate. I don't know if I have a strong feeling one way or the other. But I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I just don't think it's like to advance the plot. I don't think you need to kill anyone off.
I hope not.
Yeah,
I hope not. That's it. So, hey, we'll get into more of this talk as we go along. As always, want to give a big shout out to DailySuperhero.com, run by our good friend and fellow Force Geek, Daniel Wolf. It's where you can get your superhero fix and your Star Wars news. It's all there for you. In addition to supporting Dan, we ask that you support us as well. Please subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. Share it with your friends, and those positive reviews are so, so appreciated. You can also hit us up on social media. You got it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Instagram, YouTube, all that stuff. We're there for you. Just search for us at The Force Geeks and just add us, okay? Come at us, and we'll appreciate the action there. All right. And though we create the show every week right here in the United States, we know we have people listening all over the globe, and we appreciate our international friends as well. So greetings and thanks to everyone listening, and that includes our listeners in Brisbane, Australia. G'day to you. And here in the States, Brisbane's we got to awesome. Say what up to Diswood, Illinois, I should say. Not Illinois, but Illinois. I apologize. I'm a native Illinoisan. I'm actually native Illinoisan. I can't say my own home state.
You're starting to speak like Arkansan, though.
You know, down here, I'm sorry, I'm not even going to try. We appreciate your support as well as your friendship in the Force. So thank you again to our listeners everywhere. Mandalorian, let's just dig into it. Our initial reactions, we're kind of talking about everything here. This was the penultimate episode. There's only one left at this point for the season, the third season of this show. And yep. I've seen a lot of people talking about disappointment this third season. I have no disappointment in this season. I don't know why. I mean, I know there's always got to be some detractors out there to complain about things. I have not felt like I've not been entertained this season. How do you guys feel about that?
Same. I don't think it's disappointments.
I don't feel like it's less than the other seasons. I've enjoyed it. I'm kind of surprised to see all that out there. Have the stories gone the way I thought they would? No, but doesn't mean that I thought they were bad. I've enjoyed them quite a bit. There was a couple things here and there where I was like, oh, this is not the story I was looking for. But altogether, everything that we've seen happen throughout the season, I feel like this episode specifically, and I'll just say it's chapter 23 titled The Spies, and that is a telling title, mm-hmm. directed by the longtime Mandalorian contributor Rick Famuyiwa, and quite well done, I would say.
Yeah.
He also serves as the show's newest executive producer this season, and seems to be this episode specifically to me seems to be a lot about payoffs from earlier episodes, yeah. weaving all those various story threads throughout the season in together into this one, and beyond even just this season, there have been overarching story arcs that are coming into play right now toward the end of this season, and paving the way for more stuff, other shows, other films, to the sequel trilogy, to the all trilogies, really. This is really weaving all that together better than I think any other Star Wars property has done, of weaving all the threads from all the other properties into this one. Now, granted, we've had individual trilogies along the way. We've had a couple one-off stories, but they all tied into what was going on for the most part in the trilogies. So this show has gone beyond the original characters and the original events, but is tying everything together really, really well. And I am really enjoying that.
Like I said last time, I think it's unfair to say I've been disappointed in the series until you've seen the whole thing. Because there are obviously going to be things that you aren't necessarily expecting that will happen next episode. There will be arcs tied together. There will be stories ended, stories begun. And all of that as a whole, when you take it as a whole series, or as a whole season, I should say, is going to have a different impact, and people are going to feel differently about it than they might right now. And I think that it's dumb to like, oh, it's no good because it didn't do this, that. Well, we're not done yet. Let's have some patience. I know that's not the thing nowadays.
I ain't heard no fat lady singing yet.
They're nice. They're bringing together, a lot of stuff, Nate, like you said. So we'll talk about it as we get into the show. But, you know, the cloning arc, bringing back Grand Admiral Thrawn, a definite, approaching tie into the Ahsoka show. Like, there's a lot going on. And I think that's cool. I think that's cool. What makes it fun, this interconnected world, and it makes it feel like a bigger world. So I understand why some people are like, this is not as much, the gunslinger action, this season, but I like it. So, I don't know.
I think the only thing to make this season better would be bringing Timothy Oliphant back. That's the only thing that could have made it better for me. I really feel like it's been a good season.
Robo-Fant?
I'm ready for RoboCop. Bring him in. I'm ready for it. Sure. So, I don't have complaints. And again, has it been what I exactly expected or wanted? No. But has it been entertaining? Absolutely. It's been entertaining. For sure. I've enjoyed it. Not every aspect of it, but you can't hit all cylinders for every single fan out there. But have you been entertained? Ask yourself that question. Are you ready for the next episode? Exactly. For sure. Give us Maximus in that statement. So let's dig more into this now. This episode seems to be, again, all about the payoffs and the journey of Bo-Katan Kryze. the planet Mandalore, you know, that evil villain that's been looming over everything, all coming to a head in this episode and even further in the next one. I can't wait to see what happens in the next chapter. This was an action-packed episode. There was a lot with this one. I thought it was great. I loved every aspect from beginning to end. I thought it was, I was in it, and it went by so fast, and it wasn't a short yep. episode either. It was a decently longer episode, and I appreciated that, too. Also, side note, there's so much being said right now about what the run times are for each of these shows. I don't give a shit how long each one is, and I'm sorry to go that hard with it, but no, I don't care. Yeah. Is it a good story or not? Does it feel like yeah. it's too long? Because if that's the case, then I would say don't worry about the runtime being short, because they're saying it'll be like, you know, maybe 30 minutes, 38 minutes total runtime next week for the finale.
Is longer, people who cares? Will be complaining. People will be complaining.
Yeah, who cares?
Oh, it's too slow. Pacing's too slow. Like, yeah. You know, whatever.
I mean, do we want more of it? Yeah, we're fans. We'll always want more.
Yeah.
But as a story, you know, creator, are you doing a disservice to the overall product if you just stretch it out for the sake of stretching it out? There's been a few episodes that I thought, one in particular, I thought they could have, you know, shortened it and would have been better. And, you know, people would, if they had shortened it down to like 20, 25 minutes, I mean, would I have loved 20, 25 minutes? No. But at the same time, would it serve the story better? My opinion, yes.
Yeah.
But everyone has their own take on it. So what does it matter? Stop worrying. If it's good, that's all that matters, whether it's 30 minutes or 40 or 50. I mean, do I want an hour and a half episode? Sure, I do. If it's good.
Yeah.
If it's good, I do. But if it doesn't serve the story, forget about it.
Yeah.
All right. So this episode, again, called The Spies. And despite having watched it multiple times, and I've watched this one a lot. I've watched it, like, I normally only get like maybe two viewings in, maybe three before we do this show. I've watched it six times. I really enjoyed this one. And it's there's a lot going on with this. And you know, we still are trying to figure out exactly who are the spies, because perhaps that hasn't really been fully revealed yet. There's a lot of theories. This episode starts with a spy named Elia Kane, who links up with Moff Gideon right off the bat after traversing a Coruscant alleyway that looks less like Star Wars and kind of like Blade Runner. I love that aspect of Coruscant. And I don't think that necessarily, you know, that has been stealing from Blade Runner. I think that George kind of had his ideas. And you look at any futuristic sort of deal, they all look like Blade Runner.
My
Blade
only Runner complaint is that it was raining. Shouldn't have been raining.
True, because they control the weather there on Coruscant. So, yeah. that opening scene, when the probe droid flies down, I'm like, there's no more, like, secretive way you could have done that?
Yeah.
I don't know. That was like, that's a really easy thing for someone else to see, because it's not as if Coruscant wasn't home to being the Empire's, you know, center of the galaxy. You see a probe droid pop down, you're like, yeah, I thought we're getting rid of all Empire tech. What's that thing doing here? So what did you guys think?
I don't know. I thought it was fine. I mean, there was actually like the, I think it was Screen Crush pointed out, there was a, there's actually the top of a probe droid in the fighter bar in the last episode. So
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, I didn't either. So but,
there's a lot of details.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. I thought it was cool. Like, I think they just wanted to get the probe droid in there because they think it's cool. So I'm here for it.
How excited were you to see Moff Gideon finally back? I mean, like, we've waited all season long for Moff Gideon. Like,
yeah,
he's been
you knew
talked about.
You knew
it had
coming.
To be.
As soon as the probe droid starts scanning, I'm like, okay, this is Moff Gideon's back in.
And Giancarlo Esposito is just such a great actor. He's good in everything he does. And I was just so excited to see him back. I've been waiting all season for him because I wish he was able to do more. Like, he was more of that imminent threat at all times. Mm-hmm. But I also like what they did with making us wait for him, too, because it makes it that much more impactful when he's finally back. So I got no complaints. I got no complaints with that. As much as I want to see him in every episode, I really dig that guy and what he brings to the table. But beyond that, I think they played it smart.
Well, maybe that means he's got a bigger role coming up at some point. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, either in the next season or, you know, I could see him, you know, again, the Ahsoka show weaving in some of this stuff.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think the Ahsoka show is going to more focus on Thrawn and his crew, but I wouldn't be surprised also if there's crossover like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this final showdown actually happens in this next episode, and that's it for Moff Gideon.
Possible.
But I hope not, because I like him being around, because I also find it interesting all that's happening with the Shadow Council. And I'll get to that in a minute. So Kane tells Gideon that, you know, the combined tribes of Bo-Katan, Kryze, and Din Djarin have been responsible for thwarting the pirate uprising on Nevarro. So clearly Gideon had something to do with the pirates, which are said to also have something to do with Skeleton Crew, the new show they'll be streaming in 2024 on Disney Plus. Supposedly the pirates are supposed to play into that, mm-hmm. as things are being revealed. So interesting to see how that turns out. But all of that, the reaction, it's very telling of what's coming.
I don't get why Nevarro, and why would Gideon care? Like, why keep pushing that button?
He's got that cloning facility there.
Yep.
But they blew it up.
They did. Right. But he has an interest in Nevarro, and who's to say he doesn't have other things going on cooking in the fires there in Nevarro,
maybe,
so to speak, with the lava pits and all that. I don't know. There could be some other stuff there that he needs.
It's like, but there's a million, billion, trillion planets in this galaxy. Why pick the ones that people want? Like, if you're trying to hide something, you've got plenty of places you can go.
True, true.
I don't know.
But it's the storytelling, you know? Those are the choices
I'm sure
they
we'll
make.
Find out why, but I think it's probably something to do with some of the facilities there. I mean, they got blown up, but that doesn't mean everything's gone. So,
I love that Gideon's confused, because in his mind, you know, those tribes, they hate each other.
Yeah.
But that seems to have changed with everything going on, mm-hmm. which throws into question that whole thing, like, is the armorer a spy? You know, there's a lot of talk about that, and he seems confused, like, how could that have happened? If she's on his payroll, why is he confused by that? I mean, I don't know. Well, that sort of stuff throws us off the set.
I don't know either. I mean, if she's got the horns on her helmet,
right?
Gideon later
and
in
so
the episode
he.
When he puts on, he's got the horns on his helmet. So obviously, like,
they're all horny.
Clear throwbacks to Death Watch. So you know, Italy, is it that she's working for him? Is it that she's secretly working for Death Watch? Like, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
Nobody seems to know except the people that made the show. Yeah. So we are all, you know, just trying to figure out what's going on, keeping up with all the different things, the clues out there. After this exchange, that's when we get into it. And there's a lot that happens in this cold open. Like, it's mm-hmm. pretty cool to see all the stuff they drop, because you have that exchange with Aliyah Kane. And then you've got also the Shadow Council, which, if you've read the Aftermath novels, this was really cool to see this actually taking place in live action Star Wars. Yep. So that was neat. And I recognize, you know, even by some of the, like, just look of these guys, who they were, you know, that have been in the books. The Shadow Council is made up of all manner of evil, and I'm using quotations, because something I think that new Star Wars has done is provided more than just the standard, they're evil. Sometimes they have reasons for what they do. Yeah, there's a lot of gray area. But anyway, so it's the Evil Shadow Council, and they've been flying under the radar this entire time of the New Republic, and they're only seen as kind of disposed warlords at this point out in the, you know, wild space regions. So that's all taking place. This whole council is discussing everything. One officer in particular, who is none other then Captain Pelion, as we know from the great first trilogy of Thrawn novels, it's now in Legends, but is being drawn from quite a bit. We've also seen him appear in other novels, too, which includes the Aftermath series and all that sort of stuff. But he is mentioning Grand Admiral Thrawn, once again, bringing Thrawn into the mix as the person who will return and help them bring it all home, to really assert the Empire's dominance once again. And people will be excited for it. They'll be just ready to welcome the Empire back and show their force and their might. Pelion's joined by Commandant Brendol Hux, which, again, you'll know from the novels, the father of General Armitage Hux, and just a real bastard of a guy. Does not treat his son very well, which you can see that in the sequel trilogies, that he's kind of a jerk himself, obviously. But, you know, General Hugs, as he's referred to at times. But we've got all that happening. He also appears, as I mentioned, in the Aftermath novels. And this character is played by Domhnall Gleeson's actual brother, Brian Gleeson, which I thought was really cool, because they have a family resemblance, obviously. And if you like that actor, which you got just a taste of him in this, you'll also like him in the show on Apple TV Plus called Bad Sisters, which is an excellent, excellent show. And I can't recommend it enough. It's not at all sci-fi. It's been an Irish show, and it's really, really good, though. I highly recommend it. So back to this, as I went on my little side note there. Mm-hmm. Guys, this whole thing, seeing the Shadow Council, Jake, you're a big, you know, novels guy.
Yep.
For you to see this play out, what was going on in your mind? Because it's all right there. There's a lot happening at this point. What was going through your mind?
Well, honestly, it kind of reminded me of the other Thrawn books that Zahn wrote when Thrawn's coming back, you know, and they're trying to fool everybody into thinking Thrawn's back, but in reality it's an actor playing Thrawn, and they're trying to use that excitement to, you know, bring everybody together and everything. Not saying that's related, but that's what was brought to my mind anyway.
Yeah.
You know, Thrawn is a figurehead.
Yeah. Chris, what was your takeaway from the Shadow Council?
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, just, you know, the characters from Aftermath, obviously quickly recognizing them, I thought that was cool. And just, you know, like they're debating, you know, there's a bunch of deep cuts there. So Project Necromancer, like obviously an allusion to Hux, and those guys are trying to, you know, resurrect Palpatine. So I thought
somehow Palpatine returned.
Nice. We got it. All right. That's good. So I mean, trying to explain that, how did he return? I think we're going to get more explanation in this. So you get that aspect. And then you get, you know, you get some interplay about, you know, Thrawn being there or not. And, you know, the cloning, what are they doing with cloning? You know, Gideon, it turns out, was maybe not participating in cloning, you know, including Palpatine, but more like operating on his own agenda.
He's got his own thing going on.
Pershing. Yeah. So that's, you know, the speculation is, who is he cloning? Is, you know, we think that Snoke was being cloned by, you know, by the Shadow Council, by Palpatine himself. But, you know, it looked almost like maybe some Snokes in the cloning tubes that, that were in the, you know, in the last season or whatever, on Navarro. So I don't know, man.
I remember that. Yeah. We were kind of curious who that was.
It's tough to know. You know, later on he says, you know, the new Dark Trooper armor has me in them. Like, did he clone himself? Like,
maybe.
That's my thought. I think clone himself.
So that might be it. He's trying to clone himself with some force sensitivity. I don't know.
Yeah. Yep. All that playing out. And I love how he's like saying, like, that's, you know, that's your interest, not mine. I don't care about the cloning.
Yeah.
As he's walking to interact with the Shadow Council as he walks past the vats for the cloning technology.
Right.
So clearly he's lying to the Shadow Council as well. He has his own designs on things. He clearly, like, I love how frustrated he gets with Pelion about Thrawn coming back. Like, oh, he's coming back, you know, kind of like playing on whatever. Like, he's not here. What are we going to do in the meantime? And he clearly has his own designs on asserting control over the Shadow Council. He's got his own ideas. I don't even know if he is really that intent upon bringing the Emperor back. I think he is like, I want to shape this in my image.
Yeah.
And I think he's trying to clone himself.
Wants to do his own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, makes sense to me. Now, all this, as you mentioned, Dr. Pershing's research was brought up, and he's saying, sadly, that research has been lost. No, it hasn't. We know it hasn't been lost. He's still got all the technology working for him. And he, you know, wants to mess with the midichlorians. I think midichlorians amped up in his own clones. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is going on, and, you know, it's interesting to see all that played out. Then this all points to the development of that First Order that we know is being built up at this time. All of this playing out. That's going on. They're amassing their forces and their supply lines and their troops and all that sort of stuff. So things are brewing that are yet to be revealed, but we know they will reveal themselves later because we saw the results of all of that.
Yeah.
And then as the Shadow Council plays out, again, all this happening, so much happening in just the cold open. The Shadow Council grants Gideon everything he wants after they learn of the Mandalorians that are in action right now, which includes Praetorian guards, awesome, TIE interceptors, and TIE bombers. And Gideon promises to wipe out the Mandalorians once and for all. And then, you know, we're off and running in this episode. That was so much in just a couple minutes time.
Yep.
Really great exposition for everything that's going on and tying into many other things into the sequel trilogy and OT and the prequels. So all of that is right there for you. Then after that, we go off. Fleet of Imperial ships arrives on Navarro, but Greef Karga knows, no, those aren't Imperials. Stop worrying. Look at the symbol on the big light cruiser, by the way.
On the bottom of the light cruiser.
That was dope. I really enjoyed that. Cool. That was a really great visual. I love that the effects are so good now for TV shows that they look as good as they do, which is, again, when we look at these ships, why a Rogue Squadron TV show is such a great way to go. Forget the movie.
For sure.
Do the show. Do the show.
Do it, Kathy.
Yeah, that is where it needs to go. I would love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So We, again, know it's the Mandalorians that are arriving to Nevarro. It's Bo-Katan, Mando, Grogu, all the Night Owls they recruited back in last week's episode. Bo is worried about how her helmet-removing Mandalorian friends, though, are going to get along and play nice-nice with Den's helmet wearing, you know, his covert in once they've, you know, get together and I mean, they've hated each other for so long. How's this going to go? And I think it's great that they actually address that instead of just assuming everything's going to be hunky-dory, because that wouldn't have made sense. There should be some tension still going on between these guys.
Yeah, for sure.
And they did start off tense, but the armor clangs her tools together and welcomes the new Mandalorians together and says they'll make a feast in their honor, which obviously, you know, the ones who take their helmets off are eating and the others are not.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite awkward at that point.
So were they eating the, like, flying, you know, Shreecocks or whatever they were?
Yeah.
Like, it looked like there was the three, but, like, those were foundlings, supposedly. So, I don't know. That was weird.
I still don't get that. Why do they refer them as foundlings?
I'm sure they got more.
They're food. Their food is what they are.
Yeah.
Let's be real about it. Maybe. Those are food. Yeah. From there, Grief presents Mando with a gift of some fine Coruscant liquor and urging him not to share it because there's not enough to go around. Nice little moment there. I really enjoy seeing Carl Weathers in this show. It's just so fun to see him in this world. He'll always be Apollo Creed to me, but yes. I do just really love seeing him here, even though I've talked about this in past episodes, bringing in some of these actors that are known for their properties can be a little off-putting at times because you still see them in that way, but Carl Weathers is just a guy. I just like him.
He's a good actor.
Like him. Yeah, yeah. He's a lot of fun to have around. Yep. And I like that he has such a passion for the show.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who knows if he was an actual Star Wars fan before, but by God, he is now. No question about it. So he's great for the fandom. Beyond that, fleet leaves Nevarro, heads to Mandalore. Bo-Katan and the Mandalorians are dropping back onto their home planet. As we head on, the story advances. They spot something approaching on the horizon. What is it? It kind of looks like a space pirate ship of sorts.
Yep.
When this scene came on, guys, what did you think was about to transpire?
Initially, I wasn't sure, but when they revealed the big pirate ship, I'm like, oh, well, this is like, you know, Mad Max style Mandalorian survivors.
Yeah.
You know, so...
I was like, are they going to eat them? I was kind of worried, like, when they said, do you have food? I was like, oh, we're getting to cannibalism now.
Are you food? Oh, wait, what?
Yeah. Are you food? Yeah. So, and did you recognize the main actor of that group? I forget his name now, but he was in Maverick. They're called Orders Maverick. Yeah. I forgot his name. He's a good actor. I've seen him a lot
Charles
of different
Parnell.
Stuff. But yeah, he was awesome. So,
yeah, he was good.
It was neat to see him in the mix and, you know, seeing just... you know, these kind of like just really beaten down Mandalorians and didn't know what really happened. All that plays out throughout the story, but they didn't know how exactly Mandalore really did fall in Bo-Katan's, you know, motivations for all the things that she did. All that gets explored, you know, but before they get into that, you know, they meet up, they, you know, declare themselves to serve Lady Kreese and all that. And then they move on and they're rolling. And then you get this Pledge of Allegiance beyond that. And they sit down for a meal, discuss the experience staying on Mandalore after the Empire bombed it. And that's when Bo-Katan reveals that she surrendered to Moff Gideon and shares with the group how it all went down. And you can tell, like, with how well Katie acted this out, that it, like, this was a painful thing, and she did a really good job of, like, expressing how much she hated admitting what she did. And I thought that was great. It was really well done.
Burdens of leadership, my friend.
That's right. That's right. Instead of fighting to the end, which is true Mandalorian style, she had more of a passion and perhaps more of her sister in her in that regard to care about the people. The well-being of the people was more important than honoring the Mandalorian way of fighting to the death because she didn't see the benefit in that. So, and I would suppose if you're fighting for the survival of your entire culture, that would be something you might have to consider at that point instead of just being wiped off the map forever. So, but this also gives us a really great thing where Mando kind of comes in. And again, Mando kind of sidelined. This has really not been his story for the better, you know, the second half of the season entirely.
Yeah.
You know, the first couple episodes, he's kind of the lead. And from there, it's really taken off to be all about Bo-Katan, which, again, I'm fine with. But there are a lot of folks who don't like that he's been sidelined as his character. But he has a great moment where he tells her, you know, just how honored he is to serve her. And it's not about her wielding the Darksaber. It's about who she is and what she stands for. And that's why he's there. Really great moment. Again, really well done by everybody. So beyond that, the armor volunteers to bring back the many weak survivors to the fleet. Her timing couldn't be more impeccable to be getting off world. Yeah, and that's what has a lot of us going like, what's going on? As we see things play out later in the episode, like, well, that's really interesting. And plus, I will say that the shots of her like leaving and flying out and in the different things they did to kind of show that she was leaving the planet in these moments, the way it was edited together, that seems intentional to me to make you have to think something's not right here.
Clearly
either
implied.
She's going to double cross or like the fleet's going to get decimated by Gideon's, you know, TIE fighters and whatever other ships he has. So that'll be the interesting thing to see which of those two they decide to go with.
And if she's bad and heading to the fleet as he's about to destroy the fleet, that doesn't quite add up, right? Because she'll be killed in the mix too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I go one way for one moment, then I go the next, and I don't know which way the pendulum is swinging for her loyalties.
That's why the betrayal to me could be Death Watch, right?
Like, yeah.
It could be an internal betrayal. I don't think so, but I don't know. I mean, yeah, it'll be fascinating to see where they go with that character.
Yeah. And also, I would think with her influence that Paz Vizsla wouldn't have sacrificed himself because he is devoted to the armor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely devoted.
Yep.
And if she wanted him to go with her, you would think that she'd be like, yo, he's with me. I'm cutting him into what's going on because he's going to do whatever I tell him to do. I mean, this is my cult and the cult does what I say.
Yeah.
So it will be really hard for me to fully buy into the theory that she is one of the spies. But it feels like we're led to think that. And that could be intentional that they really want us to think that. Yeah. Yep. So anyway, we move on and, you know, we've got a lot being set up here as things. She takes off and Axe Wolves and Paz Vizsla, the two most prominent meatheads in each tribe. I would say the two that are, you know, consider themselves the big swinging dicks. They play a game and rules are not quite agreed upon on how the game is to be played. And then it turns into a measuring contest and things get interesting from there. But a fun choreographed fight. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch. I enjoyed that. And also we get that moment where Grogu steps in because I've completely glossed over something that kind of important happened earlier. And that is with IG-12 coming into the mix, not IG-11, IG-12, because Grogu is mobile now and he's got some fun buttons that he says yes and no in the voice of Taika Waititi, which is a lot of fun. And we get that great, interaction with the Anzellans, which is always fun to get.
Bad baby. No, it's crazy.
No, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I just love that. I just love it. I do. But he steps in and breaks up the fight. And there you go. It's again, fun to see Bo-Katan say like, wow, he's learned a lot from that. You didn't learn that from me. I just enjoyed all of that. He's you know, asserting himself. And I don't know if it's because he has more stature now in the IG, you know, unit that he's able to like, feels like he's going to take charge of things here because no one else is willing to step in, but he did.
Well, nobody can, but he's more of an outsider than anybody else, right? So,
but he's also one of the covert,
I know,
too. He's a foundling now. And
I mean, I think, you know, the rules have never applied to Grogu.
No, they really don't. He's too cute for the rules to apply, is what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Then they spot something on the horizon. It's a moving mountain. Of course, it's another big, huge kaiju of some sort. Yep. So there's that. And does anything amount from that? No, not really. I don't even know that was necessary, but they needed some reason to destroy the ship. And that's what we got. So I don't understand. That was very random to me. We always got to have some big, you know, monster thing. And there's definitely this whole thing. John Favreau loves a good monster.
What if it was like a mythosaur type thing? I don't know.
Well, so initially I thought it was a mythosaur, but then when you, like its face is not mythosaur. So
no, not mythosaur. It's something else.
I mean, I do think we're going to see the mythosaur. Just not yet.
I think next episode.
Mythosaur's girlfriend. I don't know.
Well, I think the reinforcement is going to be the mythosaur.
Yeah.
Lowered in with Grogu riding Mythosaur.
That will be so much fun to see because, I do think that Grogu is the factor when it comes to the Mythosaur because of his ability to connect with animals and that sort of stuff using the Force.
Yep.
So I do think you're onto something. Yep, it has been. So, of course, then at that point, ship's destroyed. Mandalorian's got to hide in the caves. They just happen to be near the destination of the Forge, the Great Forge. It all works out in the end. Several more jet-packed figures fly toward them, though, and they turn out to be the white-suited beings we saw with Moff Gideon earlier. These suits look so much like what we saw in Rebels when we saw the Saxon Clint. Yeah, the Super Commandos.
Super Commandos.
Yep, it's not exactly theirs, but it's very similar. That
obviously
white...
inspired.
Exactly. And that's when we get a whole lot happen there. As Moff Gideon is revealed, the Mandalorians, they're outnumbered and they're forced deeper and deeper into the caves. They're eventually forced into an Imperial hangar and the blast doors close on them. They're trapped. Mando, on the other side of that door, he's taken on 7 troopers at once and is eventually defeated and captured. And that was like kind of a, like, what's going to happen here? What is going down? I was thinking, like, is this where they get rid of Mando for good? Does this actually transpire? Does this happen here?
And why would they want to capture him specifically? Like,
well, and it's also once he's captured, Moff Gideon, you know, says, like, take him to the debriefing room.
Why?
Well, what's going to happen there? Why do you need him? Why not just kill him?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with that.
What makes him special other than the story? Like,
yeah.
Nothing. Nothing that Gideon would know about or care about.
He knew he had the Darksaber.
But yeah, but there's that. I mean, that's true.
But that wouldn't take him.
Yeah, he did know he had it. Yeah.
He doesn't need to go to the debriefing room to figure out it's either on his belt or it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know why he needs to be debriefed. Maybe it's something to do with Grogu and
Luke Skywalker.
Maybe. I have no idea. So we'll find out. I'm sure next episode.
And
maybe that's it.
Grogu. Yeah. Possible.
Yeah. So we move on from there, and things are just going from bad to worse. You know, Moff Gideon flies down looking for, this whole thing he's got, this mix of Mandalorian, Dark Trooper, and Purge Trooper, the whole getup. He reveals himself to his rivals. He's got the horns on his helmet, as Chris pointed out early in this episode, and we get the villain monologue we've been waiting for, in which we learn that he's, one, creating a new army of troopers in the minds of Mandalore, and he's mixing the best of the clones, the Jedi, and the Mandalorians. And he also notes he's going to wipe out the Mandalorian people once and for all, just as he promised at the beginning to the Shadow Council. And let's take a listen to his evil plan.
Thank you for gathering the Mandalorians into one place. You were a talented people, but your time has passed. However, as you can see, Mandalore will live on in me. Thanks to your planet's rich resources, I have created the next generation Dark Trooper suit, forged from Beskar alloy. And the most impressive improvement is that it has me in it. You see, every society has something to offer. The cloners, the Jedi, and even the Mandalorians. By aggregating the best of each, I will create an army that will bring order to the galaxy.
I mean, it doesn't get more evil than that, right?
Yeah.
And the music. Really, really good.
Yeah.
Loved it all. Yeah. So there's his plan, and it's got the best thing in it. Me. Again, I really think he's cloning himself. He demands that Bo-Katan return the Darksaber to him, but she uses it instead to help her people escape. And it's at this point in the show that they offer up the noble Paz Vizsla as a sacrifice, as he lays down cover fire for their escape. I'm not going to lie, that was emotional. That was really well done. The music really helped it, but I watched it again just a few moments before the show, and I got goosebumps from watching it. It was really well done. So
he shoots his repeating blaster enough that it like starts melting.
It's overheating.
I mean, he basically defeats everybody, and then it's up to the Praetorians to take him down. So
that's exactly what I have written in my notes.
Exactly how they were able to like stab through his armor.
No, they're going for the joints. If you watch,
I've got that in my notes here too. A lot of people have been saying that the Praetorian Guard weapons can pierce the Beskar armor, but I don't think so. And I watched it multiple times. Like I said, like 6 times. What I looked at specifically was, to me, it looks like they were precise in striking in the points of his body where there are breaks in the armor in between the different armor plates. So
as if you watch the gunfight between the Super Commandos or whatever we're going to call them, and the Mandalorians, like they're stabbing and blasting at the joints in the armor.
Yeah.
You know, like
I will say that this does a really great job, too, of showing just how amazing the Praetorian Guard are, how deadly they are, how precise they are, because they're not missing. They're going right into the breaks in the armor every time of where these points of exposed, you know, body is, where they're not protected by the armor. And I think that does a great service to Episode 8, where it shows just how powerful Rey and Kylo are together. Because they take them down like they're not much. I mean, there's a couple points where they're struggling, but overall, the Praetorian Guard are super deadly because of how precise they are. Their precision makes them deadly.
Yeah.
And they executed it with relative ease in taking Paz Vizsla down. And Paz Vizsla, as we saw on his own, was doing quite well. Even when his Gatling-style blaster overheated and was no more useless, he then overpowered them with his brute force.
Yeah.
I think that really does a great job of telling you that in Episode 8, that's how powerful Rey and Kylo are to have dispatched a whole team of them as easily as they did. So
I think that was Paz could have done better, to be honest. I was kind of feeling like he...
I mean, he killed all of them except the Praetorians.
Yeah. I know, but like, I mean, this guy has, you know, grown up fighting. His entire existence has been about being a warrior. And yeah, the Praetorians are strong and everything, but unless they're getting them as children and raising them the way the Mandalorians do, they should not be as tough as they are, in my opinion. But either way, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. But again, I thought it was good. It was sad.
For sure.
The sacrifice was really impactful. It really served the story well. And to see Bo-Katan, who had been at odds with the Children of the Watch, in Death Watch, you know, most of her life, except for the period of time where she was with Death Watch, obviously. But for her to be like that impacted by Paz's sacrifice, that was really well done. It was good storytelling, great acting, good execution by all on that. And it was very powerful. So
yeah,
I'd say, you know, really well done. Now, after that, you've got, you know, a lot of questions that are raised to mind for what's coming up next. We know that this whole thing has been crazy to watch it transpire. Again, all the threads coming together at this point. And where are we going? You know, I mean, that's how the episode ends, on a really down note. It's hope is not great, as is very, you know, reminiscent of Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
This is the chapter before the end, and it feels like all hope is lost, and it's very reminiscent of that. A big sacrifice is made, just like an Empire where Han goes down and he's frozen in carbonite, and you feel like there's not a lot of hope left. Well, we're going to figure that out in the next episode, how they regain that hope. And a lot of talk about how big this finale episode is. They were always talking about the final two episodes, from everything we heard at Celebration, from all the folks involved with making it, that the end of this season is action-packed. And so we are definitely going to see that pretty soon. So with that, there were some questions asked of the show creators about this. Jon Favreau shared a little bit with Collider at Celebration about what he thinks fans will feel after watching the last episode of the season, and take a listen to when he was asked how he thinks fans will react. Here's Jon Favreau from Collider.
What a good way to ask that question. Hopefully they'll feel satisfied. They'll feel resolved, and they'll also feel a little surprised.
Resolved. So resolved says there's some sort of resolution. This is why I think that Moff Gideon may not survive this final showdown. I feel like it's possible that Moff Gideon is done here, and we smoothly make way for Thrawn's entrance with Ahsoka in the next television series that's coming out. And Jon has talked about how he had to be very careful about writing season 4, which he's already done, because they needed to be able to coordinate all the events happening with Ahsoka and Skeleton Crew and all that stuff playing out. Now, Skeleton Crew is not thought to be overall as being impactful on the story, but things that are happening with Thrawn and Ahsoka could be impactful for Skeleton Crew's own story, so that they're not necessarily, they're part of the Mandoverse. There's things that impact it, but they will not be impacting the further events on this story, if that makes sense. So
it does.
So that's where I'm like, what's going to happen? The resolve. They keep, in lots of interviews, Jon has said that he thinks that people will get resolution on this story. There will be a kind of a culmination of a story here. There's, to me, that's like Thrawn's the big bad next. And
I think
Moff Gideon's wiped off the map. Yeah, Chris, what do you think?
I think so. I agree. I think to leave Gideon out there, there's not a reason to introduce the Shadow Council and have, play up Thrawn that much if you're going to leave Gideon out there. So I think we'll get see resolution on that. So, and then, it'll be interesting. I think maybe they resolve the Mandalore thing too. So,
yep, I think you're right about that.
The fact that they bring Pelion into it tells you mm-hmm. that Thrawn has to come soon.
Absolutely. So we've also got a clip from Collider as well on the topic that is from Dave speaking on that subject and asked the same exact question. How will fans react? And he gives a little bit more of an answer than John did.
That's an interesting question. I mean, I have such boring answers sometimes, right? I hope they really enjoyed it. I mean, I think they'll have a lot to think about. They'll have a lot to take in. And I think with any good ending, there's the moment you're in it where you're cheering and you feel satisfied. But then there is a little bit after that where you think back at all the things that happened and maybe you start to put them together in a different way and you realize it's an ending, but there are other things happening out there in the galaxy that now you know more about. And you might learn a little bit more about this weekend, depending on what panel you go to. So, we'll have to see. But yeah, I just hope, the fans have been so great. You're right. Maybe that's bad. But the fans have been so great to me and John and the, his creation of the Mandalorian is so unique and special. I hope they feel really good about it. I hope they're all cheering and excited for the outcome, whatever that may be.
The outcome, whatever that may be. He knows what it's going to be. Well, come on now,
yeah,
Dave.
I mean, it's clear, the interviewer immediately is like Ahsoka. So, and based on the plot of this, it makes sense. There's a bunch of Imperial remnants. Thrawn's going to come back and, maybe bring them partially together.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then that's going to, the fascinating thing to me will be seeing how we get from Thrawn to the First Order. What I really want to see. I don't know. I think the cloning thing. So I hadn't realized, I sent you guys, Screen Crush did a really good, run through all the cloning stuff. It was good. So
it was good.
I didn't catch that, the theater where Darth Sidious / Palpatine tells Anakin about, Darth Plagueis and how he learned to, prevent death and, whatever. That theater is the same theater where Pershing gives his TED Talk on mm-hmm. cloning. So you're like, man. And then, they were discussing how the Darth Plagueis theme, the music that's playing is the Darth Plagueis theme that later on plays, in Rise of Skywalker when you see some of the Snoke clones. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so, the music was cool. Telling and that was giveaway. Yeah, I thought Screen Crush did a great job putting that together. And it was it's about an 18-minute long video, but it goes into how it all ties together. And again, that I did not even put it together, that opera house where in, episode 3 is where you're learning about Palpatine's master, Sith master and all that. And it's the same place where the TED Talk happens with Dr. Pershing. So really, really, really great stuff there. Now, those are the two show creators that we've heard from. What about, the guy that's kind of set up as the main villain in this season? That is Moff Gideon himself, the actor Giancarlo Esposito. He chimed in on the finale and fans' reactions that he expects we'll see.
Holy. Holy. Yeah, I think it's going to be quite a surprise to many of the fans, what really is happening. You see a little teaser today. Moff Gideon's very democratic. He's with the council trying to bring people together. You see, Thrawn thrown out there, in a way that could relate to other shows or possibly, but he's not with us. And so you see people, relying on and trying to figure out, who is going to be that all-powerful leader. Right now you got Moff Gideon who's in the mix. He's back. He's back after having been, shuttered for a little bit. He's, obviously escaped and obviously has ideas how to divide and conquer.
Now, I should have warned you ahead of time. There's a lot happening in the background there. Mm-hmm. That was at Celebration before all the panels had kicked off. It was the initial interviews that were going on. And you hear Emily Swallow being interviewed right next to him. And might I add, just looking stunning as she was there. So, but she was answering similar questions as well. She was asked that question, too, from the same one that all three of these guys got asked. It was all Steve Weintraub from Collider who was asking them. And he doing a really good job of phrasing that question. What do you expect fans to react to?
Yeah.
What do you think the reactions are going to be? Because that's a good way to, they can stay safe in their answer.
Stay safe.
Right. And she was like, I don't know what to say to that. Some are going to love it. Some are going to hate it. Right. That's what fans do. So yeah. I didn't really go with her answer just because, I mean, she's not wrong.
It's a non-answer.
But she was also very afraid to say anything beyond that. And and she knows that people will like it and people will hate it. And it is what it is. So she does sound a bit jaded on that. And I can understand why, because if you pour your heart into making something and you can be a little disappointed with seeing the negative reactions to it all, which is why I like to say that I think the season's been great. And I like everyone involved who's making it. So there was, as our friend Paul has mentioned before, we've gone through droughts of no Star Wars content. So why don't you just shut up and just enjoy what we've got, and we'll see where it goes. Okay. Of course, we're fans. We're going to pick it apart. But
either you watch it or you don't.
Yeah. And if you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. That's fine. Yeah. But I think you're missing out if you decide to make that
choice. Don't be negative Nancy. Be positive Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's Giancarlo Esposito talking about it, and he was saying basically holy shit is what he was trying to say, that he thinks fans are going to freak out, there'll be big surprises and big payoffs in this next and final episode of the season. But I have to bring this up because Brendan Wayne, who is one of the three men in the Din Djarin Beskar armored suit, playing alongside, he's one of the stuntmen and is getting, you know, billing credits for it now as playing in this role beyond just being a stuntman, because he really is doing a lot more than that. He posted a cryptic yet somewhat telling statement to his Instagram, guys. Do you know where I'm going with this? Have you seen this?
No.
Okay.
For sure.
He posted this quote. This is exactly what he wrote. This next episode is going to make you wish you hadn't asked for more. It might just hurt too much.
Mm. Okay.
When I say that, it might hurt too much. You're going to wish you hadn't asked for more because it might just hurt too much.
Hmm. Yeah.
Something big's going down and something bad's going to happen.
Something bad's going to happen.
Yeah. And like, you put all those statements together that, you know, they hope that people like it. They think there's going to be surprise. There's going to be big moments where you cheer hard. The audience is going to be like, holy crap. And it's going to hurt too much. Something big is going down. And that's why I tend to think Din's out of the story. I just feel like, what's going to hurt too much? Yeah. That would hurt a lot.
That's interesting.
Now, maybe it's that we like the armor so much and we're led to believe that maybe, you know, intentionally led to believe that maybe she's a spy and she's really not. And maybe she's the one who makes a sacrifice and knows that her covert can't handle having Bo-Katan in charge and her, because they're always want to go to her because she was their leader. Maybe she sacrifices herself. I think Emily Swallow, her character of the armor, does not make it past this next episode. I think that character is done. And maybe that's the big sacrifice, but I feel like Din making the ultimate sacrifice could be a huge thing.
Well, I mean,
so I'm not ruling it out.
The way that Star Wars betrayals always go is that either they get killed off or they sacrifice themselves and get killed off. So it's one of those two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I mean, it could be the armor with the fleet. You know, it could be Din. Like, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Well, I also asked Tagami, Matt Tagami, who runs our social media, to chime in his thoughts on things. And here's what he thinks is going down.
We've already lost Paz. I know this is the season finale. We kind of already know that next season is the last one of The Mandalorian before it goes into potentially a theatrical movie to tie it all together. So I'm just wondering, in my opinion, I think it sounds like it might be Din's time to go. He might have some heroic end to his story arc that transitions everything, the Mandalorian show and the Mandalorian era, over to Bo-Katan to be the ruler, and maybe change her for the better and maybe even for the worse. But if given what he had said, I think if I had to place a bet on it, is that unfortunately he's going to die in some fashion. It's not what I want, but it does and can make sense. But I'm just, we'll see what happens.
Mm. We will see.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what Bo was referencing with Grogu, you know, when she said, what are you looking at? And he's like, you know, seeing the future, like you're going to be watching over me soon.
Yeah, could be. I mean, well, they could throw a wild card and kill off Bo-Katan.
They could. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense with Pedro's schedule and all that stuff. So
it does. It does. And also, I just keep thinking back to early in the season when she said, you didn't think your dad was the only Mandalorian, did you?
Yeah.
The way this has kind of become her story this season and everything going on, it just kind of feels like, and plus, you notice Grogu is sitting in her lap when they're flying with the fleet to come down.
Yep.
Like, he's kind of bonding with her too. It becomes the Mandalorian 2.0 is Bo-Katan Kryze and Grogu are together at that point. They're bonding. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of stuff happening. And as you like to point out, Jake, no accidents.
No accidents.
Perhaps this is weaving those threads together. So I am not going to be shocked at all if we see Din, one, either die, or two, have to go set off on an Ezra-style mission where he's sacrificing himself to go to the unknown regions or something, that he has to go off and Grogu's going to stay with Bo-Katan.
Maybe we get a Rogue One moment and everyone dies.
If that's a possibility. I think that makes for a really awkward movie if that's the case for Mandoverse tie-in, but
unless it's
sure
a retro,
it's possible.
You know.
As you know,
a
Mark
retcon.
Would say, yeah, as Mark Hamill say, it's possible that could happen. So, but guys, that's the episode. We're at a loss as we have to wait, you know, a few more days now at this point until we get the finale of the season. And then we're probably looking at, you know, a couple of years before we get the fourth season, which we know exists. And next time we'll talk about it. But Rick Famuyiwa has been throwing some hints out there about when production is expected to begin on the fourth season. So, again, he is serving as the executive producer role. He took on this third season of the show. And he's a force to reckon with. Some of my favorite episodes have been directed by Rick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's good.
Bryce Dallas Howard,
Rick. Bryce and him are, I think, my favorites.
Amazing, amazing stuff. So really like that. And, you know, John Watts has also done a great job, too, with his, Peyton Reed. John Watts is, of course, the Spider-Man, latest Spider-Man director of those movies out there, and then also taking on Skeleton Crew. So, but Peyton Reed did a great job, too.
I think it'll be interesting. Like, there could be a lot in this last episode. You know, you're obviously going to have more, you know, you're probably going to see the Mythosaur.
Yeah.
You're going to have the, you know, Super Commando / Jump Troopers versus the Mandalorians. You're probably going to have a fleet action, you know. I really hope Carson Teva shows up with a bunch of, you know.
Oh, that'd be cool.
New Republic Starfighters, too. Like, I don't know. It'll be interesting. Hopefully it's an epic
I just
battle.
Don't know that that's going to happen, though, because everything they've set up with the New Republic being just...
Yeah.
Reticent to commit anything. So
it doesn't mean he can't go and do what he wants.
I just think it would be cool.
Yeah.
But
it would be cool. And I'd love to see Zeb flying in too.
Yep.
That'd be fun to see him with the Rangers.
Awesome.
I want to see that. So, all right. Well, that's everything for this week, guys.
Yep.
Again, we have a lot more to unpack. And in the coming weeks, we'll do deep dives into each of the Star Wars projects that were announced or looking at everything we know about Ahsoka, because we got to wait till August for Ahsoka.
Yeah,
and then we got
to
wait till
be here before you know it.
Yeah, and we also have to wait until 2024 for Skeleton Crew.
Yeah, we got Visions, really, right? Is the
Visions coming up on May the 4th.
May the 4th,
which I'm super excited
about.
That'll
be the only thing to tide us over the summer, so.
Yeah. So next week, we'll be focused solely on The Mandalorian once again, unless there's other some, you know, really major news. That's where we'll focus. And then after that finale episode, we'll start doing some breakdowns of everything that has been taking place and all that we've learned from Celebration.
Remember Vision Season 1, did they drop it all at once or did they?
They did.
Pair it out?
Yep. Okay. All at once.
Got it.
Yeah. So they'll do the same thing with all of those. There's some really fun looking projects they can't wait for. And we'll preview that before it comes out as well. And then obviously we'll do an episode to break down what we got from that. And the thing to remember with Visions is it is not tied to canon. It's not considered canon. It's just fun explorations of Star Wars themed stories and playing in that galaxy. So
I'm good with that.
Yeah. With that, we'll be back next week to break down the final chapter of the third season of The Mandalorian right here on The Force Geeks, a Star Wars podcast, which you can find on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and just about any place that you get your podcast from and tell your Alexa device to. You can play us there. Please feel free to hit us up with your emails at theforcegeeks@gmail.com. We're on Twitter as well, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff is there. We've got some fun stuff planned for the coming weeks. We can't wait to tell you more about that as things come into clear view. You can also check out The Force Geeks, a Star Star Wars Podcast Listener Group, where you drive the content there and decide what we're going to talk about in that space. In the meantime, we ask that you please recommend the show to your friends and fellow Star Wars fans, and we appreciate those shares, likes, and follows. Remember, if you don't follow the Force Geeks, you're looking for your Star Wars in Alderaan places. Talk to you soon, and may the Force be with you always.